Hi, I'm Elaine Boddy.
And I'm David Treadway.
And you're listening to the Food Bod Pod.
With Matthew's Cotswold Flour.
And Shanna Sourdough. Welcome to another episode. And today, it's all about sourdough. And we are here in my kitchen, and I'm surrounded by bowls of dough, some special recipes that I've created just for the podcast. But before we get on to that, I'd like to have a little conversation about springtime and sourdough and what that means for us. Anybody watching the video will see we're in my kitchen, and we have, it's attempting to be spring-like.
Spring weather, the
attempting
wind's blowing.
To be. Having said that,
I got to pour with rain.
Wet through this morning. So spring is here, and this is a brilliant time of year for making sourdough. And the reason being because of the temperatures. So if I just backtrack a bit, something that I talk about a lot when it comes to making sourdough is understanding the temperature in your kitchen. Anything that is made with yeast in any form is going to be affected by heat and cold. That's a standard, that's a given. If you make bread with commercial yeast, you mix it up, you leave it. It's proved in 1 to 2 hours because that's the nature of the yeast. With sourdough, we use less starter. The recipes are designed differently and they prove for a longer period. So if you read any of my recipes, it states in my recipes, prove overnight or during the day, however you're doing it, for 8 to 10 hours at a temperature of 18 to 20 degrees centigrade. That does not mean you need to control the temperature in your kitchen. It doesn't mean that you need to therefore try and maintain those temperatures. It's merely a starting point and a guide. If the temperature across that time is 18 to 20 degrees, using 50 grams of starter in your dough, the dough will take 8 to 10 hours to fully prove. And to fully prove, want it to double in size.
My kitchen will, if the heating's not on in the winter, will drop to just over 17 degrees.
Yep.
That really slows it down.
Yeah, and actually I made notes about this for one of my books. And for every degree centigrade that it dropped overnight in my kitchen, I added an hour. So with the thermometer that I use, and I recommend everybody's got thermometers in their kitchen. I have a couple of these. But with mine, you've not only got the readout of what the temperature is right now, but you've got the readout of what it has been over the last 24 hours.
I can see from that that the lowest it's been in your kitchen in the past 24 hours is 16.1 centigrade.
Yes.
But the highest it's been is 21.4.
If I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, right, last night it went down to 16 degrees. I know what that's probably going to do tonight then. This is why I always tell people to make copious notes. So if you've made your dough, you've left it. So I leave mine at 9 o'clock at night when I go to bed. I then see at what point it is by the next morning. I know if it's taking 10 hours because it's been down to 17 or 18 overnight, I know what it's going to need to be the next time. Yeah. When people have messaged me and said, oh, it's gone down to 14, 15 degrees centigrade in my kitchen overnight during the winter, my dough's taking all this time to prove. So is mine. This is normal. This is normal behaviour. And the key with this is to wait it out when it's cold. Or page 61 of my book, The Sourdough Whisperer, there's a cold weather boost. There are things that you can do to give it a boost.
One of the things that I've done from time to time, if I know the dough isn't going to be ready in time for me going to bed, for example, is to move it to a colder room.
Yes.
Where I know I can leave it. I know it's going to be 14 or 15 degrees in our study because it's right on the end of the house. The room never gets really, really warm. So I put the dough in there and I know I can leave it safely overnight.
And my view is always better to wake up to a bowl of dough that is underproved, that needs more time, than to wake up to a bowl that's overproved and you've got to do something different with the dough.
But what about if it's more than 20 degrees?
Now,
that's where I have always started to panic.
As soon as you start to then go over 20 degrees or 20-21 degrees is okay, so you go over 22, then you need to start to change the amount of starter. Now, we're going to talk more about this when we come into the summer months. But as soon as your temperature goes over, then you need to manage it differently. The amount of starter you put in your dough is the power you give it. So as it gets warmer, the best way to reduce that power and to slow down the proving is to just use less starter. And that's how you manage it when it gets warmer. But I want to talk about right now in the spring. This is a lovely, lovely time for making sourdough. Because, as you saw already, for me overnight, I've got between 16 and 21 degrees. So the 21 degrees would have been at some point during the day yesterday in the kitchen. But it's gone down to 16 overnight, which isn't too bad. As we start to get warmer and you start to get between 16 and 18 degrees, up to 19 maybe, it's going to be a joy for proving your dough. And it will do exactly what it says on the tin. So if you've struggled over the winter at all with your sourdough, be rest assured, coming into spring, or if you're in the southern hemisphere and you're coming into autumn, these are lovely, lovely times for making sourdough because we've got such nice even temperatures. There are easy tricks for dealing with the heat, just as there are with the cold, which we will cover as we go through the seasons and as we do more podcasts. The key is always to watch your dough. You have to watch the dough and not the clock. So whenever people say to me, how long? I can't tell you how long.
Yes. Yeah.
Because you need to judge it. Yeah. This is why there's a post on my website entitled, how long? Because how long is a piece of string? There's no answer to it unless you say, how long is it going to prove for at this temperature with this much starter? So there's an entire formula. The food board formula, how much starter have you got? What's the temperature going to be during the proving time? And then that will give you the answer to the how long. When it's got really hot, I've gone down to 5 grams of starter. Because if it's warm enough, it's going to respond anyway. So you don't need to be scared of doing that. When in doubt, shove it in the fridge. Always. If you have made your dough and you think it's moving too quickly, or you're worried it's going to be overproofed by the time you wake up, stick it in the fridge exactly as it is, in the bowl, with its shower cap on or whatever you use, stick it in the fridge. When you are up the next morning or when you want to carry on, you take it out the fridge, leave it on the counter to warm up and finish its job. If you take any kind of timetable, if you started off with my standard timetable, you can easily move that round the clock. As long as you allow for the proving time and you allow the dough the time to do what it needs to do, you can shift those timings around. And then the question of how long can I leave my dough in the fridge, which I often get asked, again, that comes back to what's the temperature in your fridge? How strong is the dough? Now, we've had people in our Facebook group, I can remember when Andy ended up needing to go into hospital and his dough was in his fridge for 72 hours. He baked it and it was still fine.
Yeah.
Because it's actually very difficult to ruin.
Yeah.
You might get a slightly different texture, but it will be fine. But what you'll get is a lot of flavour. And this is the other thing with slowing it down. The longer and slower the fermentation, the more flavour you'll get. So a lot of people think if you whack more starter in, you're going to get more flavour. You're actually not. If you've got less starter and you're giving it longer to ferment and you actually just relax and take on board the joy of that time, you will get a better flavour and you'll get a better texture. So be brave. Remember, it's a great time of year if you're going to get started now. It's also great for your starter because your starter will work to some happy timings. But the best thing always is to make notes. When you feed your starter, make a note of the time and the room temperature that you fed it. Leave its lid on, leave it on the counter, and as soon as it's ready to the point that you want it to be ready, make a note again of the time and temperature. And if you do that regularly throughout the year, you will see a picture of what happens in your kitchen. It's exactly the same with your dough. This is why I always recommend keeping a journal, because you will be able to build the picture for you. I'm not in your kitchen, so I can only give you the guidance based on all of my experience. I'm in the UK. We've got a certain kind of weather. You might live somewhere that's higher humidity. You might live somewhere that's higher altitude. You might live somewhere that's drier. And the best way to find the answers for you is to be making those notes. Write everything down, because no small detail is too small. That everything makes a difference. So make the notes, keep the journal, and you will build your own picture in your own book. I hope that that has made some sense about the temperature. The key thing for people is, please understand, you do not need to try and manipulate the environment at which you're making your dough. You don't. Unless you're in a big bakery, it's a whole different thing. If you're a home baker, learn to work with your environment. This is the difference between what I do and a lot of other bakers do. Learn to work with what you've got in life as well as sourdough. It makes life a whole lot easier. And what we're going to do is talk about the doughs I've got in front of me, one of which is my master recipe dough, which is just about up to play. And this will give you just another tip again. I started making this mid-afternoon yesterday, and I knew I needed it for us today at whatever time it was going to be. So even though it's spring, it's an easy time of year to make sourdough, I used a very small amount of starter, again, to manipulate the timing, because I needed this to be ready for when we wanted it. So that's another thing you can do. You control every element of making sourdough. When you first start making it, you don't think that. You think it controls you. But you can control every element, and the amount of starter you use is a big part of that. So I made this yesterday, just to slow it down a bit this morning before you arrived. I put it in the fridge, so it's a little bit chilly. But this is a very happily proofed bowl of dough. Now, if we had time, I might want it to be a little bit higher. But this is in one of the bowls I like to use. So this is my Durelex glass bowl, 23 centimetres across, 9 centimetres deep. And these bowls are perfect for judging how well your dough is proofed. They've also got lines engraved on them. And you can use the lines halfway up for fully proofing one of my baby master loaves, which is really useful. But for my master recipe, you just need to come up to the lip. So with this, we're going to call this done for today. I'm going to pull this together and put it in a banneton. And then we're going to show some really fun new doughs. And these are doughs that I have made just for the podcast. So I'm going to pull this dough together in front of me to go into my banneton. I've got my Brotform banneton, which you can get these exact things from Shana Sourdough in the States. You can also get them here easily in the UK. So this is 21 and a half centimetres across, often listed as a 500 to 750 gram dough banneton. And I know that dough is less than the weight of this one, but if you're going to look at a banneton, it's better to go a bit smaller than a bit bigger, because that will help you give the shape to your dough. And all I'm going to do with this dough is pull it together to go into my banneton. And this is the other way to know about how your dough is. How do you want your dough to be? You want it to be structured. You want to be able to virtually hear it talk. And all I'm doing is pulling my dough into a nice tight ball. And this is a point in my recipe where a lot of people struggle initially, again, because they worry about squashing the bubbles. This is me bursting bubbles, because you want to be really firm with that dough as you pull it into a ball. Never turn it out.
You don't bother to turn it out and shape it.
No, none of that faff.
Let it relax.
No, no pre-shaping.
Straight from the bowl.
Straight from the bowl into the banneton. So we've got a nice, firm ball of dough. And if you can see, if you watch the video, you'll see it will sit in your hand and keep its shape. So there's, you couldn't, even if you sat on that, it would still come back to life. So don't worry about being firm with it. Don't worry about handling it a lot. You need to be firm with it. And you wouldn't be able to squash it if you tried, because it's full of power. Yeah. You can feel it, can't you, in the dough?
Yeah, absolutely. You once said that you could run that over with a truck.
Yeah.
And it would still spring back.
You know, I had a load of kids here once playing with some dough, and oh my gosh, they pushed it, they squashed it, and I kind of, And actually, they all baked up perfectly. Mm, mm. So we've got that in the banneton.
And what about pulling it together now we've held it, it's sort of opening up a bit. Are you going to stitch it together?
No.
Or just leave it to relax in the fridge and
just leave
find
it.
Its own shape?
Because it will, the Banneton will help shape it. The cold will help shape it. You don't need to faff with it any more than that. Mm. And that's the whole point of putting it in the fridge, is the fridge, not only does the fridge time develop flavour, it helps your dough to firm up so that when you're turning it out later to bake it, it holds that shape that you want. Yeah. So whenever people say to me, oh, can I just skip that bit? You can, but when you turn the dough out, it's going to spread.
Yeah.
But like any part of this, you can do whatever you like.
Yep. So then it goes into the fridge.
Into the fridge.
You're listening to the Foodbot Pod with Matthew's Cotswold Flour, inspired baking from Britain's artisan flour miller.
Shanna's sourdough for all of your Foodbot sourdough baking essentials. Any of the equipment that I use in my recipes, you can find at Shanna's Sourdough.
Right, so that was the standard MR, 500 grams of flour into the fridge. That's just strong white bread flour.
Yep.
No other kind of flour in that. So that's just a standard white sourdough.
Yes. I love that people call my recipe the MR. Do you know, when I first put my website together and I was just writing up my recipe, I just put Master Recipe just as a name. I never thought it would become a thing. I should almost trademark it. So yes, that was just my standard master recipe with 500 grams of bread flour and 350 grams of water.
So what are we coming on to now?
Right, we're coming on to a couple of new recipes, especially for this podcast, one of which is sitting in front of us in its loaf pan, having done a second proof and is ready to go into the oven. I'm going to put it in the cold oven and then I'm going to turn it on and we're going to bake it and see what it does. Yesterday, I went foraging and I picked some lovely wild garlic.
Now, I'm amazed that it's already in season, but you...
Yeah, it came out early.
You were chatting earlier and you said that the flowers aren't out yet.
The flowers aren't out yet, but the leaves...
Still use it, you can still use the leaves before it flowers.
Yeah, and actually, it's better to use the leaves early.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, if you can use young leaves, people think that they taste better.
Oh, right.
But I picked this yesterday. Now, if you can find wild garlic, that's fabulous. If you can't find wild garlic where you are, you can use spinach and then add a bit of garlic to it. But you might already have the flavour because what I've done is replace some of the water with an Italian dressing.
Ah.
So this was brought to me by our lovely baker, Rhonda, who came to visit me from Oklahoma and bought me various things from her hometown, including this Italian dressing because she loves it so much.
Lovely.
So what I've done in the dough is replace some of the water. So this is one that I made yesterday. And as you can see, it's very bubbly, David. If you have a sniff.
It smells fabulous. You can see the wild garlic just laying on the top.
Oh, just amazing. So I'm going to put together the dough so you can see what's going to be in it. And then we're going to fast forward as if we've gone across 24 hours. And I'm going to plop that into the pan to prove again. So you can see some of the stages of making this.
It really does
God, it smells astounding.
Amazing.
Absolutely amazing. So to make this dough, we're going to have our standard 50 grams of starter.
And is this just a plain white starter? I can see specks in it. So
no, it's just plain white.
Just plain white bread
it's
flour.
Just our, the specks you can see are just the bubbles.
Oh, right, okay.
So I've got...
Maybe there was a bit of wholemeal in there, but it's just...
It's my star.
Yeah.
It's my famous star. We've got the bowl onto the scales, down to zero, and we're just going to take out 50 grams of starter. Tends to be about 2 tablespoonfuls if you get it right.
And if you end up with 52 grams, does
Don't
it matter?
Worry about it, but look at that. Can I just say 50, bang on. If it's 52, if it's 48, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay. So with this recipe... I've got 50 grams of starter. We're going to do 300 grams of water. And don't worry, I'm going to write all this up. So don't worry about taking notes.
So only 300 grams of water.
300 grams of water, and I'll explain why.
Because normally in a just a plain white sourdough, you'd be 350.
Yeah. Reason being, because I'm replacing a chunk of the water and adding more, so I'm putting in 100 grams of the dressing.
So you're going out with 400 grams.
400 grams of fluid, partly because it's a focaccia, and it's okay if it's a bit more hydrated.
Yeah. Okay, so this is not going to be a loaf.
No, we're making this as a focaccia.
Okay, lovely.
So we've got the dressing in there, and I tell you what, there's not much left in it, so I'm just going to tap a bit more in it.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not? So that's going to bring us a whole wealth of flavour, a whole massive wealth of flavour. Mm. But also, because we've got this extra fluid, when you put the leaves in as well, it starts to soak up some of the fluid. Mm. So don't be nervous about that.
And it doesn't have any effect on the proofing time?
No, not at all. Actually, it seemed very happy.
Okay.
Yeah, considering that the one that I made yesterday has only got a tiny amount of starter in, it's very happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes these extra ingredients, the dough likes it. Yeah. So we're sticking in 500 grams of bread flour.
Our favourite strong white bread flour,
yes.
Matthew's
Our Churchill's.
Absolutely.
And then I'm going to start chopping in some of the wild garlic. Now, what those of you eagle-eyed might have noticed, I'm not adding any salt because the dressing is quite salty.
Yes, yes.
For me, it's quite salty. Yeah. And depending on your tastes, you might want more.
But if you're making focaccia, you can always sprinkle some rock salt or sea salt on the top of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, make it attractive.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't have the same seasoning as I've got, or you've got something different, then give it a try.
Yeah, yeah.
You could even just be doing it with some olive oil and then adding in some extra herbs and flavours yourself.
Mm.
So this was just a case of trying something to see what it would do. And this is also very similar along the lines of a focaccia that I've got coming in my new book, which is the first time I put some of this dressing in something. And that's got a whole load of other stuff in it.
I notice you haven't weighed the garlic.
I'm weighing it as I'm putting it in.
Oh, right, okay.
So I've zeroed it, and I'm weighing it as I just chop it in. And I've already washed it and dried it.
Yeah.
Dry it carefully, otherwise you're going to be adding all that extra moisture to your dough. Yeah.
And you're not chopping it particularly.
Just roughly.
Just roughly.
Yeah, just roughly.
Shredding it, really. So how much...
It ends up being, in the end... 25 grams.
Okay.
So I've only got a couple of leaves left. I'm just going to put the whole lot in.
Yeah, yeah.
So in the recipe, I have written 25 grams. If you end up with 20, it's fine. If you end up with 30, it's fine. See what you end up foraging.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch the video, you'll see we've got a very aromatic bowl in front of us.
Mm. Incidentally, if you do have wild garlic left over, it makes the most fabulous pesto.
Yes. Yes, I can imagine. And I've made so many things like that in the past with wild garlic. So I'm just going to gently move it around to mix it through. And I always, always start my dough with a big tablespoon to slowly start to mix it together, just so that you're not going hell for leather and ending up with flour everywhere, to be honest.
And could you also do this in a stand mixer, or would it
bruise
the...
Yeah, but look at how I'm mixing it. Yeah, it hasn't bruised the leaves when I've done it. So it should be absolutely fine. As always, I'm going to go in with a bowl scraper. So I've roughly mixed it a bit. I'll go in with a bowl scraper to...
Get all
just
the
mix it through, yeah. And it doesn't have to be super smooth at this point. It doesn't have to be anything special. We just want to get the liquid through the flour. God, the smell just keeps coming, doesn't it?
It can be quite a shaggy dough.
Really shaggy.
Doesn't have to be smooth.
Yeah, doesn't need to be anything pristine. Put a cover on it and walk away. It'll be fine.
And is this going to be left for about an hour
or longer
because of the other bits and
pieces
you put in?
It doesn't need to be any longer because of the stuff in it. I'm just tending to leave my first mixes longer nowadays because I think it's nicer when you come back to them. And I've had quite a few people message me and say, why are things slightly different in your third book to your first or second book? You know, because I am leaving my dough sitting for longer. And, you know, it's merely because it's my progression.
Mm.
You know, the books have also followed my learning along the way as well.
Yeah, sure.
So they reflect that too. But it doesn't matter. You could leave it for an hour, you could leave it for two, you could leave it for three. Oh, God, it smells so good. So this, what smells we've put in this, the dressing we've put in this has got salt, garlic, pepper, oregano. Whoa.
And you said this recipe is actually in your forthcoming book.
It's along similar lines to one. This is a special one.
I'm not going to wait for Christmas before making this, I can assure you.
It's along similar lines, but this is a wild garlic version. Yeah, yeah, so the one that's coming in my fourth book has got standard garlic in it as opposed to the wild garlic. Yeah, yeah. So always, utensils in some cold water.
Wash them immediately. Otherwise,
just straight in cold water to soak. Otherwise, it will dry
like
on.
Concrete.
Oh. Yeah. What will happen then with that dough? We'll let it sit for an hour or two, do some pulls and folds on it. Because this is a focaccia, you only need to do a couple of sets of pulls and folds on it. You don't need to be stressing about the structure of this.
Okay.
When we then leave it overnight to prove...
So here's one you made earlier.
Here's one I made earlier. The next stage after this is fully proofed is to plop it into your pan. Oh, look at that, David.
That looks lovely. Oh, and bubbles.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. It's
As
really
we're
working.
Holding up the bowl.
You can see the fermentation underneath.
Oh, isn't it beautiful? Yeah. We're just going to spend the rest of the podcast just going, oh.
It is such a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Oh. And that, you see.
A sourdough is such a beautiful thing.
And I think when you look at that and you look at that structure, that's what your starter has done.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the work of just, and this has only got about 30 grams of starter in
it
because I needed to stretch it out. We now have a big bowl of bubbly dough, and it's quite sloppy because we've got all that extra hydration. Just going to whack in a load of olive oil.
Yeah.
And one of the ways to really get great focaccia is a lot of olive oil. If you don't want to use that much, of course you don't have to.
Are you going to spread that out over the pan to make sure it's properly distributed?
I'm going to plop that in it and it can move it around.
Yeah.
I'm just flopping the dough over on itself in the pan so it's all covered in olive oil.
That looks fantastic.
And it looks amazing already, actually.
I sometimes make...
Bubbly and textured. And
olive sourdough with olives in.
Yes.
And I also put some olive oil in. But I read somewhere that you don't count oil as part of the hydration figure.
No, you don't. It depends what you're using and how much you're using, but no, you don't tend to need to.
But something like that dressing you put in would have had water in it as well.
Yes, there's a lot of thinner, and I use more. Yeah. But it's the same with honey. I don't allow for honey in hydration.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, you don't need to. This is our focaccia, plopped into the pan, covered in lots of lovely olive oil.
And it's gradually going to spread and fill the pan.
Yeah, it's going to spread. I mean, you would look at it and go, you could probably bake it now, possibly, but if you can make yourself leave it, cover it and leave it for a bit and then bake it a bit later, it's going to be even better.
And you wouldn't put that in the fridge for a secondary proof.
You could.
You could do.
Yeah, yeah. So if you say you wanted this for later, or even tomorrow, you could cover it, stick it in the fridge. It will still grow. So when dough goes into the fridge, it doesn't immediately stop because it needs to come down from room temperature.
It slows down.
Yeah, and then it will get to a point where it sleeps.
Yeah.
So you could put this, and it's the same with your starter, you could put this dough in the fridge. It will start to bubble a bit and then it will come to a stop. And you could then bake it tomorrow direct from the fridge.
Yeah.
You don't need to warm it up again. So I'm going to cover it with another pan over the top for now. Let it proof again a bit next to us and we'll bake it a bit later. So this is the first of our recipes for this podcast alone.
And this is the wild garlic.
Wild garlic focaccia. And dressing focaccia.
Focaccia. Excellent.
I'm going to wash my hands and we'll come on to the next one.
You're listening to the Food Pod Pod with Matthew's Cotswold Flour and Shanna's Sourdough.
So, focaccia doing its thing, resting for a while, and we're now on to another loaf.
We are.
And what's this one going to be?
This is a whole concoction of fabulousness. This loaf we're going to make is made with custard.
Ooh.
Yes, because when we were shooting for the book, I'd bought custard for us to possibly use in one of the shots with something I'd made, which we never got around to using. So I did my usual, what could I do with it? Because no one in this house is going to eat it. So I shoved it in a loaf and it makes a really nice dough. So I put it in a loaf with some dried fruit. So
Wow.
What we've got here, which again you will find written up for the website, we have got dough that is made with a lot of custard.
So this is a
and dried fruit.
Slightly more yellow colour, isn't it? It's got a distinct colour to it because of the custard.
Yes, so this is why we're calling it a springtime loaf, because it's a nice bright yellow. And I have used a big pot of supermarket made custard. Yeah, yeah. I did not make the custard. I bought it.
Disappointing.
I know. So it's very beautiful.
So it's just any supermarket
bright yellow
custard.
Stuff. Yeah, and you'll see, if you're watching the video, you'll see when I plop it out how bright yellow it is.
And could you use cans of custard?
Anything. Yeah, any version of custard.
Or make it from powder?
Well, there's a question. So if you remember the loaf that I put in earlier in the oven, this one is slightly different, because with that one, I put a packet of custard powder in with some water and the dried fruit. So we've got a comparison between what the loaf would be like if we used a packet as opposed to using the ready-made.
And was that packet of custard powder just made up with the quantity of water recommended? Or just using your standard...
I didn't even make the custard. I just put the
In with the flour?
Yeah, in with the flour. And it said you'd make the custard with 400 ml of water. So that's all I shoved in it.
So... that tin loaf has got more water in it than you usually put into a recipe.
But because it's got the custard powder and 150 grams of dried fruit, that will all help soak it up.
Yeah.
But also, we're baking it in a tin.
Yes, so...
by baking it in a tin...
doesn't matter too much if it's a bit sloppy.
Yeah, and it is. So what we're going to do, the one that I've got in front of me, we're going to shove aside for a second, because that's the fully proofed version. I'm going to mix one up, show you one I made earlier, and then what I'm going to do with this.
Okay.
Okay, so we have got our scales. We've got our bowl.
So this is starting from scratch, mixing all the ingredients together.
Absolutely, the starting from scratch. So we're going to use custard, and because it's quite thick, we're going to loosen it a bit with milk.
Okay.
I like to use oat milk. That's just my choice. You can use any milk just to help loosen it up a bit.
And oat milk itself has got quite a creamy taste as
I
well.
I like
so
the flavour of it.
Yeah.
So we're just going to go in first with our lovely happy starter, our 50 grams of starter. There we go. Look at that, 50 grams.
Spot on again.
Because I've finished with my starter for the day, she's going back into the fridge. We're going to plop in, look at that.
Oh, wow.
500 grams of custard.
Wow. So we had 50 grams of starter,
500
grams of custard. 500
grams of custard. And we're just going to put in 50 grams of milk, because it would just need loosening up a bit.
Yeah.
So you might need to see how it is with your flour if you need any more than that. So we're going to give that a swish up. Now, when I first made this, and it was sent off to my testers, aka Graham's workmates.
This is your husband's workmates. Yeah.
They said how nice it tasted. And I thought it kind of takes on a bit of a kind of fruit loaf panettone kind of feel. Mm. So the first one I made with just raisins. Mm. Whereas this one, we're going to put a mix of dried fruit and dried peel in it, as if we would when we were making something Christmassy.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got our custard, we've got our starter, we've got our milk.
So that's going to have quite a... you were talking about panettone, which you can almost taste the vanilla in a panettone. This is going to be the same, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a similar kind of feel to it. Yeah. And it's light.
Yeah.
You're going to you're going to think it might be heavy because it's a heavy dough, but it's not. Once it's baked, it's light. Mm. So I'm now going in with my 500 grams of flour. There we go.
Again, our favourite strong white bread flour in the UK, Matthew's Churchill. Yeah.
This one I am going to put some salt in, which always seems a bit weird to me when you're making something that's sweet, but you're doing it to bring out the flavour.
Yeah.
And then we're going to add...
So how much salt have you put in there? About
just a teaspoon.
All right, okay.
I only ever put a teaspoon in.
5-7 grams, something like that.
Yeah, it works out about 7 grams. And then we're going to add 150 grams. I was going to put the rest of that in. It was about 150 grams in there. I've just used it all up because there was a bit left over in our bowl. So we've got basically what you're looking at the moment is almost like, it's like mix-up sundae.
Yeah, yeah. So this is sultanas, currants, peel.
It's the kind of thing that you might buy to put in your Christmas cake. It's a really nice mix because it's got some raisins, sultanas, it's got dried apricots, it's got dried cranberries, and it's got some bits of mixed peel.
Okay, lovely.
So it's a really nice mix. Yeah. Again, bought from a well-known supermarket brand. But you could always use just raisins.
Yeah, yeah.
You could use just cranberries. You could make your own mix. So you can go with whatever you want. So we're just going to slowly start to mix it through. And let me tell you, this is a heavy, sticky, sticky mix. This is not going to behave like any other dough that you have made because it's a really heavy, sticky thing. And this I'm going to put in a loaf pan because the loaf pan will help give it some shape. But you could also do one of my favourites and put it in a bump pan. Anything that's going to give it some shape. So it's, as you can see, David, we're starting to get some of the yellow coming through. Yeah. It's lumpy as well. So it's heavy. It's lumpy. It doesn't look anything like you think sourdough is going to be.
It's looking like a cake mix.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So this is where we start to blur the lines. When my husband Graham takes his all my different breads into work, there is one very lovely lady who we need to name check called Leona, who produces post-it notes of feedback. She takes it very seriously.
And gives us some feedback. Excellent.
Yeah, and what I love is Graham will just go, oh, it's from Elaine. She won't even ask what's in it. She'll just take it. And recently I made two huge peanut butter and jam babkas, and I sent one in especially just for her to have as a thank you. And apparently her family wasn't interested, so she just ate the whole thing herself, which makes me very happy because I am a feeder. And she sent me her feedback.
But how lovely that she's given you really creative feedback.
And that's what I want.
Yeah.
I don't want people just to go, oh, it's lovely.
No.
I want them to do that too.
Yeah, critique it. Yeah.
Yeah, but tell me a bit more about, you know, what you think about it. So this is dedicated to Leona, and a great big thank you. So look, I mean, David, it's really sticky.
Oh, this looks fabulous, though.
It's a big,
sticky mess. It looks like it will bake up as a cake. Definitely.
Yeah, and you could do this in a cake pan.
Yeah.
You could, you know, put it in a cake tin. In fact, we might put one of them in a cake tin just to show that you could do something different with it. But you're gonna get to a point with this where it's just not worth you trying to do any more.
Yeah, yeah.
So just do what you can. Tidy the bowl down because that's what I would do.
And it almost looks as if there's a beaten egg in it. It's got that lovely rich yellow colour.
But if you think how you make custard, it's just got a load of egg yolks in it, hasn't
it?
If you made it from scratch, I believe it has egg yolks in it, doesn't it?
I think it does. Does it have any egg whites in it?
I don't know. I've never made it from scratch.
No.
There we go. I'm not going to even try and do any more of it than that. So what we've got in front of us is a very sticky, heavy mix. And I'm going to clean my bowl down a bit and cover it and then show the people in the video and show you what it looks like a few hours later, because I made one of these at 7 o'clock this morning to be able to show you.
Terrific.
You're listening to the Food Bod Pod with Matthews Cotswold Flour, bringing you 200 years of farming and milling excellence.
Shanna's sourdough has everything you need to make beautiful sourdough, from the starter to the roaster and everything in between.
So what we've got now then in front of me is that heavy, heavy, sticky mix that we've just made. So I'm going to move that and then show you. Here's one I made earlier. So as you'll see, what's happened is it's just kind of spread.
Yeah,
and stretched.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't look as if it's doubled in size.
No, but this is one I made literally a few hours ago to be able to show you.
So it's still got some way to go to.
Yeah,
to
But what I wanted to show is how it then starts to look.
Yeah, yeah.
So with this, I made it earlier, I moved it around a bit a couple of hours later, and it's the easiest way to deal with this is with a scraper.
So you're going to move it around a bit with a with a scraper, so just to what
time? I did a first mix with this, I left it for a while, I pulled it together a bit earlier with a scraper. So all I want to do, just one more time, is with the scraper, do the same kind of action to try and lift it over. So I've got the scraper.
It's not too sticky, actually.
No, it depends on what you like. I don't like getting sticky, dirty hands.
No, no.
People know this about me. Other people would probably go in with their hands.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just going to use the scraper just to lift it over on itself. So that's all I'm doing, turning the bowl, using the scraper to lift it over on itself. See, all I'm doing, I just want to make sure that that starter is mixed all the way through.
Yeah.
So this doesn't need to be a pristine, mega structured dough, because we're going to put it in a pan.
Mm. And but clearly the starter is already working because it had grown.
Yeah, and it's bouncy.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah.
So that's all I've done with this, is just move it around a bit more to make sure it's well mixed.
Yeah.
And that's it. All I'm going to do is do this a couple of times, and then we're going to cover it and leave it to prove. Look at that.
It looks lovely.
Lovely.
Well, that rich, lovely fruit and peel in it too.
This is just a few hours down the road from starting it. And then what happens is we leave it again, put the lid on, leave it to basically fill the bowl. This is a big dough. So leave it to fill the bowl and it's going to be ready to go. And then what happens is I'm swapping the bowls in front of me. We end up with a lovely big
bowl. And here's another one you made earlier.
And here's another one I made earlier.
So how? What stage is this? How many hours is this?
This, I made this yesterday afternoon. This was, I didn't use too much starter in it, so I could prove it
a long
time.
A long, slow proof.
But normally I would use just my standard 50 grams of starter. Mm. This is a heavy dough. And any doughs that are heavy and made with milk will be slow to prove anyway. Mm. So this one might take a bit longer. So if it takes longer than normal, don't worry. Just let it do its thing.
And this has also been in the fridge overnight?
No, this is on the counter.
All right, so it's just on the counter, right?
Yeah, yeah. I only put it in the fridge for an hour or so this morning to slow it down before you arrived. So this one, we're going to pull it together to go into a loaf pan. And again, I wouldn't be too precious about it shaping-wise. So I'm using an open Pullman pan.
Because, this is just your normal size Pullman
pan?
Yeah,
because I like the I like the shape that they give. Pullman pans tend to have a higher sides to them. But you could use any loaf pan. You could use cake pan. You could use your bump pan.
Now, you're not lining that with parchment paper.
No, all I've done is put a light spray of oil in
it. Okay, but they have got holes in the bottom of those, haven't they? So yes. Is the dough going to start?
It doesn't, because the dough's quite thick.
Yeah.
But because of the holes, what I tend to do, depending what I'm baking in them, is I often put them on a pan because things do drip through. Yeah. Whether it's been chocolate or a lot of honey or something, they can drip out the bottom.
Yes, yes.
So it's worth protecting underneath them in the oven so they don't end up all over the base of your oven. So all I'm going to do with this dough is try and pull it into a big fat sausage. And again, I only do this in the bowl. I don't turn the dough out because I can't bother. So I've pulled it all.
So you're shaping it in the bowl, effectively.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So I've gone from one side of the bowl and pulling all the dough into the middle. I've tucked the sides in. I turn the bowl 180 degrees and do the same again from the other side.
I noticed you didn't wet your fingers when you did that either.
No, I never do.
All right, okay.
You can do if you want to at this stage. It's not going to make too much difference, but I always try and encourage people not to wet their fingers because they basically are changing the dough.
Yeah, you're actually adding.
Yeah, you're adding liquid every time.
Only slightly, but nonetheless, you're adding to it. Yeah.
So we want this to just come together in some sort of great big fat sausage, which you can see I now have in my hand. And I'm going to plop that into the
bottom
pan.
On the top. So
we want the smoothest
top. The top in the bowl goes on the bottom in the pan.
Yes, that's it. So we want the smoothest part towards the top.
Yeah.
But don't worry if it's rough, because it will spread and it will fill the pan. And as you can see, there's not actually that much on my hands.
No, no.
Because by this point, it's not that sticky. And we've got it in the pan. I'm going to put cover over it again and leave it on the side to prove. So you've got, again, you've got the two choices. can either leave it on the counter to prove to grow up. Basically, I want it to be level with the edge of the pan. Either do it on the counter or you can do it in the fridge. If you do it in the fridge, I find if you prove sandwich loaves in the fridge, I find you get a more even shape, that they grow up and make a really nice even finish.
I must admit, I've never had great success cooking sandwich loaves in tins. I don't know why. I tend to do exactly the same as you would do for a dough shaped in a banneton, but it's in the tin, goes in the fridge. Mm. I then tend to let it come to room temperature before I bake it, and usually in the hot oven.
I would do it straight from the fridge.
Okay.
If you've let it grow in the fridge, why would you bring it to room temperature anyway? But as soon as you do, it starts to get bubbles on the top.
Yeah.
It starts to lose its shape.
Yeah.
So next time you do it, let it grow to the top of the pan. You've got that nice smooth finish and stick it straight in the oven.
Okay.
This is the kind of thing, if you've got questions like that, if there's things that you would particularly like me to cover or show, please do get in touch. A lot of you have got my email address anyway, elaine@foodbodsourdough.com. You can also use our email address, letstalk@foodbodpod.com.
That's the one associated specifically with the podcast.
Yeah.
And there's also a contact form on the website as well.
There is, but you can find me anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, everybody can find me online anywhere. But if you would like us to include anything in the podcast or any questions you've got, please do send them in. And we will try and include things as much as possible.
So any questions and any suggestions, just write to us, get in touch with us, and we'll include answers and ideas in future episodes in this season.
Any second now, the oven's going to beep, so we can take the first of our loaves out. And this is the one that I made with custard powder and water. So we've got all of these things around us and all of these doughs around us, as you'll see if you're watching. But this is the test one. So I have no idea how much the flavour is going to come through with this because I haven't done it before. And I think it might almost be like adding a bit of sugar
to the
dough. So I think it might get that kind of feel through it, but I don't know if it'll be as yellow.
But interesting to compare it with the other one where you've used custard.
Yeah.
There goes the beep.
I don't think it'll be as yellow inside.
Wow. Wow.
So here we go.
That looks fabulous.
I think it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
It smells good. So let's see what it's going to do. Okay.
It's a bit embarrassing if it won't come out the tin.
It will. Sometimes what you need to do is leave it to contract a bit to be able to come out.
Yeah.
Other times, one can assist the situation and just ease a bit around the edges. This was a big dough.
There we go.
Happens to the best of us, you know.
Oh, wow, that looks wonderful.
Look at that.
What a lovely shape.
And Pullman's makes such a nice shape.
Mm.
So what you can see is it looks a bit like, it looks very much like a fruit loaf.
Yes, yes.
Because you've got all of that dried fruit through it. If we...
Nice and hollow sounding.
Yeah, it sounds nice and hollow. And if you've got your pan, if you've got your loaf out and say you had put a tray underneath it to protect the base or to stop anything leaking out of the Pullman, if you get it out, sometimes they're a bit pale.
Mm.
You can just put it back in the oven,
just
uncovered.
Like that. Just straight
like
onto
that,
the oven
finish
rack.
It off a bit.
Yeah.
So it's easy enough to do that. And if you've got a loaf out that you felt was a bit loose, depending what you put in it, and you wanted to just add some colour to the base, you can always lie it on its side and put it back in the oven.
Yeah.
But I think this one's going to be okay.
It looks like, the colour looks fantastic. It looks great. I mean, so if you saw that on a bakery shop shelf, you'd think, oh, what a lovely looking loaf.
And it's a little bit lumpy, but I think that's okay. Well,
it's artisan.
Artisan.
That's an artisan.
It's life. Artisan. Made by these fair hands. It is artisan.
I usually use the word artisan to mean didn't quite turn out the way I intended, but
it's how you use the English language to your benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. That really does look super.
It's all right, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So let's stick that one to the side, and whilst we've had the oven on, I think we should put this focaccia in.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Yeah.
As the oven's been on anyway, I'm just going to move the tray up. So I've often asked this question.
So you're using fan oven or?
I always use a fan oven.
Always use convection, yeah.
People often say to me, if you've baked from a cold start with your first loaf, do you need to wait for it to cool down again to bake your second loaf? And of course, absolutely not. I mean, that would be, you know, such a waste of energy. I do everything from a cold start as much as possible. I also have two ovens, so I can bake more. But if you've baked your first loaf from a cold start and then you've got subsequent loaves to put in, just put them in the hot oven and just bake them for 5 minutes less.
Yeah, just reduce the time a bit.
That's all you need to do.
Yeah.
So we have our focaccia dough in front of us. And it's not been there long, so it's only spread a little bit. So what we're going to do is just get a bit of the oil on my fingers. Ooh.
Dimpling it with your fingers. Oh, wonderful.
Look at that. Look at that. Pour. We have got this very beautiful dimpled dough. And we're going to put it in the oven. I've put it up to 200 degrees centigrade fan. So that would be 220 if it was not fan assisted. 200 degrees centigrade is 425 degrees Fahrenheit. And depending whether you've got your convention or convection oven, make the adjustments that you need to.
So, into the oven.
Going in. Into the oven. There we go. Let's see what it does. That is the sound of the focaccia coming out the oven.
Oh, wow, it looks wonderful. Doesn't that look good? It really looks lovely. Perfectly baked. Perfectly baked.
How amazing does that smell?
Yeah, it really is.
The challenge now, let me just turn the oven off, is to leave it just briefly before hacking it out.
Well, while that's cooling a bit,
yes.
One thing we're not going to have time to do in this episode is actually bake the second custard fruit loaf that you made in the tin, because that's not going to have time to prove. But you are going to take some photographs of it when you bake it later
yes.
and put those on the website.
The one that we've put into the loaf pan, I will bake later, and the others, because I've got all these doughs, I will make sure they're baked as well. I might bake them in different pans so that people can see what they can use.
And we were saying earlier that neither of these will actually work as a free-form loaf. They really are tin loaves.
Yeah, well, they're designed, the focaccia is designed to be that, which is why it's such a loose dough.
But I'm thinking and of the custard and fruit
the
loaf.
The custard, yeah, I mean, it's just
it would just
so
spread and
sticky.
Yeah, I
wouldn't even try. You won't be able to shape it at all. Yeah. But which is why I'll try it in some different pans to show what else you could do with it.
Okay.
This, the loaf, the dough that I put into the pan earlier needs more time to do its second proof.
Yeah.
So you've been able to see the one that came out that was made with the custard powder. And once it's cooled down a bit, we'll cut into it and I will show photos and videos of how they look. So make sure you go to our YouTube channel, make sure you go to our website, foodbodpod.com. And then you'll be able to see the recipes, you'll be able to see the photos, you'll be able to see the process of all of them. So we will have everything there for you. But this is the nature of sourdough. It's not going to be ready like
that. Yeah, exactly, exactly.
But this...
Oh, it just smells great. Well, I suppose while we head to the table to start tucking into this delicious focaccia, and I want to try the custard and fruit loaf as well, it's time to say goodbye from this edition of the Food Bod Pod.
I really hope that you've all enjoyed being here in my kitchen with me. I hope there's been some tips you found useful. I hope there's recipes that you will make. Please let us know if you do. We'd love to hear from you. But I think we should also very much thank once again our partners.
Indeed, that's Matthew's Cotswold Flour.
And Shanna Sourdough. That's what makes this podcast work. Remember, anything that you need, you can get between them. So if it's flour and you have access to it, try cotswoldflour.com, the website. If you're in the US or Canada, or Shanna will post wherever you need stuff and you'd like to use any of the equipment that I use, including those Pullman pans, can look at Shanna Sourdough website. And she's also extremely helpful. So if there's anything you need, pose the question to her.
Well, while we wait for this to cool, I'm off to find some wild garlic to pick and make some of this focaccia. It looks so delicious. In the meantime, we'll see you next month for another edition of the Food Bod Pod. But it's goodbye from me, David Treadway.
And from me, Elaine Boddy.